Hey guys, welcome to the Kevin and Fred Show. My name is Kevin Kaufman. I'm your host, and I just want to say thank you for taking some time out to listen with us this week. Do me a favor, if you don't mind, before we get to today's guest, head on over to ratethispodcast.com. That is ratethispodcast.com/NLA. That stands for Next Level Agents. ratethispodcast.com/NLA and leave us a review, or just go to any podcast player that you prefer and look us up, the Kevin and Fred Show, and please leave us a review. That is the best way to support our efforts here in the show. All right, let's get to today's episode.
All right, guys, we are back on the Kevin and Fred Show. And this week I'm joined by Chris Suarez, longtime friend. How's it going, Chris?
It's going good. It has been many years that we've known each other, huh?
Yeah, it's been a while. I feel like, let me see, you joined KW in what, 2009-ish or something?
Maybe even before that.
Yeah, I joined in 07, middle of 07, because that's when I got licensed. And then probably sometime by late, I think it was Mega Camp 2008 was like the first time I ever went to Austin or any sort of like big national event. I don't remember if it was there or some point the following year, but I feel like our paths crossed fairly early on as we were kind of both kind of thrust into a bunch of things there. So it's been a minute.
Yeah. I think you have that time frame right, actually.
You somehow still have hair. I do not, but
yeah, I mean, ask me in a year. We'll see. It's been a year, buddy. We'll see how the year goes.
Right. You know, Chris, one of the things I remember, I remember it was a mastermind event. I don't know if you remember the way Gary used to do those masterminds, but it was like small, it was like big group, even though it was smaller at that in those times. And then like, and then it would break out into like production groups. Right. And I remember Gary interviewing one time I don't remember what hotel we were at, but I remember you told the story of like, and Portland like wasn't your first place you started a real estate business. I remember thinking like, God, this guy just hops around and like starts out all over again. Can you maybe just refresh that memory for me and kind of how, what real estate was like maybe pre-Portland. And then when you actually got to Portland, you know, what starting over was like for you?
Yeah, for sure. And actually I think that informs kind of how I think about the world and what I'm even doing now as well. But I started real estate in New York. I was 21 years old. So that was 23 years ago that I've been in this industry, which is wild to me, but started in New York, built up a business there with Fulton Banker, actually, was working with some attorneys at the same time, right around 9/11. And I was working in the city at the time of 9/11. I was out of the city because I was house sitting, but the office that I worked out of was actually the third building that fell. And that was kind of like this sort of wake up moment for me. I mean, it was for everybody, right? It was for the world, but for me, it was, I've been born and raised here. This is my city. Do I want to live here forever? Do I continue putting down roots and building a business? And at the time, the answer to that was no. And so I kind of picked up and actually moved to Eugene, Oregon, kind of the furthest away that I could possibly go on a map, like, you know, politically, like everything.
I was going to say about as opposite of NYC as you could be.
Yeah. Built up a business there, Kevin, and spent about 5.5 solid years there. Like, I feel like that's where I really learned the business and figured out that, hey, I could sell some houses. And met some awesome people in Eugene. Actually met my wife in Eugene. And she looked at me and she's like, why do we live in Eugene? Like, you're from New York, I'm from Mexico City. Like, what is wrong with this picture? And so, you know, honestly, like kind of overnight on a whim, there were a lot of reasons why, but we decided to move to Portland. And I remember going to my broker at the time, right? Just sort of traditional brokerage, and said, hey, I'm moving to Portland. And she said, when? I said, on Friday. And she's like, that's crazy. Like, you have this business here, what are you going to do? And I said, yeah, there's something wrong with this business when I can spend like 5 years blood, sweat, and tear building it, and tomorrow it's gone. And so I moved to Portland regardless because we were committed and kind of actually got out of the business for a bit, which is, you know, for a bit, I mean like a couple months, but like I loved it so much I found myself brought back in. And that was the moment where I decided I'm going to learn to build this the right way because I've now moved twice. I'm probably going to move again. So how do I build a business such that like it will be a real business and not depend on me being in a specific location, which is what real estate is, right? Like build up your name, build up your influence. People know you, you walk down the street and people are like, hey, he sold my house. Like I just didn't want to be that guy again, which I was in New York and I was in Eugene and I just didn't want to be in Portland. So that was sort of this progression of me really challenging how the industry had taught like all of us what real estate, being a real estate agent was all about.
Yeah. It's this, you just hit on so many key points there. So you get, let's do this though. So you get to Portland, you're certain you're going to do this kind of a different way and build it up from the beginning. What were some like the key things that maybe you thought, whether it was like mental model wise or actually tactically that you did in those first couple of years of restarting that were in the direction of, I'm not going to do this the same way as I did in Eugene and New York?
Yeah. I think one of my key sort of changes was I'm a studier. Like I love reading. I love watching people. I love trying to figure out what other people are doing. And that's what I did. Like I figured out what other people in the industry were doing and then I would do that. But I realized that I had to begin to go outside of the industry and look at how real businesses were built. So I looked at insurance agencies and I looked at just all different kinds of businesses and thought, there's something wrong. I mean, honestly, I went into the library and I started just taking out business books. And I remember I came across The Millionaire Real Estate Agent and I thought, well, that's a hokey title, so I'm not going to get this book. But at the end of that book, in the back of it, and I have it on the wall over there, but on the shelf, in the back of that book, there are some funny stories about like these random dudes and random women that built million-dollar businesses. And I came from a world where, you know, I remember being 12 or 13 sitting in my kitchen and I asked my dad the questions like, hey dad, like what's $1 million? My dad was a copy repairman from the day he graduated high school to the day he retired, like did nothing else, like always fixed copiers. So $45,000-$50,000 a year, right? For his entire 50 year career. And he said, oh, no, don't worry about that. You're like, you'll never make $1 million. He said, in fact, you will work every day of your, no, Jim, you work every day of your life and you'll add it up at the end and it still won't add up to $1 million. That was my reality. That's what he taught me. And I love that. And that was his truth. And so it became mine. And then I see this book called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. I was like, what a joke, but I got it. Like, cause I was going to read everything. And when I read it, you know, it wasn't that everything in there was perfect, but for the first time I said, hey, this is like a model of actually running a real estate business, not running sales. So I began to just sort of model that the best I could and began sort of setting up sort of these divisions in the business, lead generation division, a budget, an org chart, an operational division. And I realized that little by little, it was looking more like a business than a real estate practice.
What was the challenge for you like, or was it a challenge maybe because you were so clear on it, restarting again to actually take the time to not just be the guy who's transacting as much as he can possibly transact? Because I know that's such a hard challenge for people who either have started a team or trying to start a team or a business. I'm not a big fan of the word team, but the reality is like that's one of the biggest obstacles that people have is like, well, I gotta go sell real estate, right?
Yeah, you're right. Like, and I think it's one of the most important conversations for anyone to have. And you have this a lot, which I appreciate. Cause herein lies the challenge. At that point in my career, this is back a ways, right? So now this doesn't sound like anything, but I was selling 50, 60, 70 homes a year. Coming from nothing, that's a lot of money, right? And so for me, deconstructing that and being willing to do it different is near impossible because we get addicted I wasn't even spending money. Like I lived on very little, right? I lived in a 350 $1,000 a month apartment while I was selling 50 homes, no joke, like 50 homes a year. And then I bought my first house and I spent $86,000 on a one bedroom condo because it's the cheapest thing in the city. Like I was really, really like frugal slash cheap, but I still have this addiction to what we're taught to do in this industry. Like I do this activity, I get this result. I do this activity, I get this result. And every time I do this, every time I make that call, or every time I do the open house, I'm going to get two clients. And every time I get two clients, I'm going to close one of them. And every time I close one of them, I'm going to make $8,000. And whatever that number is for us, what I realized later is we have to deconstruct instant gratification, which is what this industry is all about.
Yeah.
And it's actually, it's almost like we get these addictive personalities in real estate because we do something and get something immediately. And it happens to be a lot of money. And I think that that was always the biggest challenge. So it was internalizing that, all right, this year I'm going to save a lot of money. And I technically could not sell a house for the next 3 years. I'm still going to be good because I'm not changing my budget. And now it gave me this runway to live in this world of delayed gratification. It's why one of my favorite behavioral studies of all times is that study done in the 70s by Walter Mischel with the marshmallow.
Yeah.
Because it's just this clear picture of instant gratification. I'm going to eat the marshmallow. I'm going to go and pick up the phone and get a sale versus no, you said you'll give me two. If I wait these 15 minutes for me in business, I believe I'll get two sales if I actually build out this system or follow this process. Like it is that delayed gratification. So for me, I have that picture indelibly sort of bit like just ingrained in my mind of my being the kid with the marshmallow.
You know, you just gave me a thought that I hadn't really thought of in this context, which is when you talk about delayed gratification. So there's a guy here locally. I know you know of him at a minimum because you read the book and you've seen him before. His name is Russell Shaw. So Russell's a friend of mine. He's here locally in the Phoenix area. And he said one time at, I think it was a mastermind that he and I used to be a part of together, where he said, you know, the good news and the bad news about real estate is like everything you do today doesn't really show up for like 90 days. So if you screw off today, you're okay. And if you do something, and if you do all the right activities today, you don't actually get rewarded for it usually for like 90 days. Cause it's just like the natural sales cycle. Right. And I think what happens is 90 days from now feels like delayed gratification already. And yeah. So it's like, well, hey, I made my calls today. So in 90 days, when I get that $8,000, like, man, I already waited a long time. So there's this, I feel like there's maybe this extra sense of like, I'm going to hold on to what I do have rather than go, yeah, I don't really need that anyways. I can sort of reinvest it and delay that gratification even further. And I think that's an even harder, it's almost like delayed gratification 202.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like there's something I share with a lot of our team today. And it's an old sort of essay that Covey wrote, and it's called The Law of the Farm. And in that essay, he talks about how the law of the farm says the farmer has to show up every single day. Like he can't take a 2 week break and then get back to the field. He can't say, you know what, I'm going to take June off and I'm going to plant in July. Like he has to show up every single day. He has to wake up at the same time every day. He goes out into the field and he can't cram. Like there's no cramming. In our business, we're like, you know, we screw off for 2-3 weeks and like, oh, but I'm going to hit it on Monday. Like there's a temporal landmark coming up. It's called May 1st. And I'm just going to get on the phones May 1st. But what we don't realize is everything that we were building has fallen apart. All the weeds are there. The birds came and ate the seeds. And so, you know, he said like in any business, we have to follow the law of the farm. Like you have to be just willing to show up. And he quotes Earl Nightingale in that essay, I think, where he said success comes like not from sudden bursts of sporadic activity, which reminds me of every real estate agent ever, but through the cumulative effect of disciplined daily effort. And so for me, honestly, when I read that, I said, okay, well, once I commit to a model and once I continue to learn new models that are entering the industry, like if I trust just like those kids at that nursery in Stanford at that experiment, like if they trusted that an adult was going to come back in 15 minutes, they wait to eat the cookie. But if they didn't trust that it was going to work, if they didn't trust that anyone was coming back, I might as well eat the marshmallow now. And so for us, I think so much of this business is we don't really trust the model that we committed to. We don't really trust that, hey, yeah, if I do this each and every day for the next 2 or 3 years, the business is going to be here, because we just ping pong or sort of pinball all over, and we change our strategy so much.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Is we say we're following a model or we're doing things, and then but the reality is we don't actually trust it. It's like, because to your point, if I really trusted it, I just keep doing it, right, and keep leaning into that.
Yeah, it's that choosing pain of the discipline over the ease of distraction and gratification. Like that's in everything, but it's more so, I think you're right, in this industry, because the gratification is bigger here than anywhere. Like nobody gets those checks in other industries. Like, oh, if I do this, I'll get 10 grand. If I do that, I got 20. Like that's just like, I forgot who said the greatest addictions in life are cocaine and the paycheck. Like it's what happens, but the crazy thing is it's such a hit in real estate because the paycheck is massive. And so herein lies why our industry actually has built this scarcity mindset as well. Like we hold this fear of what happens if your commission goes away, and then everybody runs towards this way because someone's going to save them because they're so addicted to that commission or their lifestyle now demands it.
Yeah, no, that's such a great point. And because those commissions and or the reward, if you will, for when you do the activities can be so high, like most people can get by on not having to have that regularly. Like not everybody, like you can get by without having to have a paycheck every single day or every single week or every single month, whatever that looks like. And so it just sort of perpetuates even more of that. It was like, well, cool, I can go away and go screw around, and then it'll get bad again, and I'll start working, and then I'll get paid enough to screw off again.
But that's because that's only because our win is the paycheck. It's only because like we've attached like what we do to that result, and so that's why you're right. Like we don't need one a day. We don't even need one a week, most of us, right? We could have. I mean, well, look, the average agent has one every other month. So the fact is there the attachment of what we're working for is what causes that attachment to the paycheck.
Totally agree. So let me ask you this then, because and I want to talk about kind of the evolution of your team and place, but before we do that, like kind of just thinking real estate agent hat on again, if you will, what do you see as with the people you're talking to and your experiences, like the biggest obstacles on how people can actually go from just being good at sales into turning their sales into a business, right? Like what are the main obstacles or tactics that people, you know, need to tackle more of?
Yeah. I think it's consistency, right? Which we've talked about, like consistency. I don't care how bad you are when you start, if you're consistent at it, you are, unless we're the lamest real estate agent that ever walked into this industry, you're going to get better by doing it consistently. Like I was never good or great at anything. I just did it consistently over a period of time and got better and better and better and better and better and better and better. 23 years later, I show up okay, right? So for one, it's consistency. But I think the other part of it is I'm a big fan of partnership. It's like what everything I have built up to this point now has been this commitment to growing through partnership, and partnerships look different. Like it's interesting. You've always like you've gravitated towards partnerships as well. And that's a lesson that many people can learn from you, that I think that that too often the country and business in our country glorifies the solopreneur, like the solo founder, like look at this guy or look at this woman. I mean, even like none of those people were solopreneurs. Like they had other people as well, but because it's the story we hear in our head or the lessons we learn in business school, then we feel like We need to put our head down. We need to work hard. We need to figure it out. We don't ask for help because that's weakness. And so, you know, my goal is to rewrite that story around business. Like, yeah, I happen to be in the real estate industry, solving real estate industry problems. But my real win at the end of the day is rewriting that business conversation such that people are more open to look at partnership and look at it as strength and not weakness. So I actually think that that is a huge win for, you know, a check mark in the building a business column is finding the right partnerships in order to do that.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at other businesses in other industries, you know, it's almost never one person. It's almost never, like, granted, we all think of Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and, you know, et cetera, when we think of like big businesses. But at the end of the day, when you go look at even most tech companies, most like founders, like they end up recruiting a founder team, right? They're out there finding other, what would normally be like maybe first employees that are actually they're basically hiring business partners. And that's happened so often. And for some reason in real estate and a few others, maybe not so much. And I don't know if it's because it's like the service type of business or what the deal is, but I couldn't agree with that more. I don't think it's not like we get extra credit or we get a 10% bonus because we did it on our own, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, you bring up Jeff Bezos. And honestly, if you look at the history of his company, he wasn't there alone even in the beginning.
Never.
And he would bring up specific people. And these names aren't names that you and I would even know or be familiar with. And he defines them and describes them as completely influential, that Amazon wouldn't be here without those individuals. So I think that's a big takeaway for me. The other thing, and it's probably one of the most influential interviews I'd ever listened to, but I was listening to Paul Graham, who founded Y Combinator, right? One of the greatest investors of all time, especially sort of at the angel stage, early start. And so bright guy, like he knows how to find companies that have great ideas and have sort of a trajectory. And he was telling the story about some just great ideas that came in. And he would sit in front of that entrepreneur and say, "This is incredible. Like, this idea is money. Like, this is awesome. Who's your co-founder?" And he'd say, "Well, I don't have one." And he said, "I only invest in companies where there's a co-founder. Go find a co-founder." And he, you know, the person on the other side of the table would say, she'd say, "Well, it's my company. I founded it. Like, what do you mean go find a co-founder?" And he said, I only invest in co-founder, co-led companies. And here's why, because business is hard. So I know that when you're hit with obstacle after obstacle after obstacle and you want to quit, your co-founder is there saying, "No, we're not quitting. Like, we work together." And so he told the story of like, he worked with Uber early on and Airbnb, and Chesky walks in and says, like, "Here's my idea." And he's like, "Where's your co-founder?" So he had to go find Joe Gebbia and say, "Okay, well, come back. Like, now I got my co-founder. Now will you invest? Now can we be in the Combinator?" I said, "Yep." And so I think there's like looking at building a company worth something. Like, that's what I mean by going outside of the industry and learning from people that have built companies. I looked around and said, "Well, shoot, like I'm 16, 17 years into this and I don't have a co-founder. Like, it's just me." Like, and that isn't going to build what I want to build. And so for me, that was a sort of an eye-opening conversation from someone around how I reframe even my mindset you brought up earlier, my mindset of what partnership really is.
Yeah. So speaking of that, like, let's just transition there. So nowadays, obviously so let's do this for the listener, maybe that doesn't know Chris Suarez that well, and does not know what Place is. Tell us a little bit about what does your day look like? What's your job today, Chris? And what is your company doing today? And how does that relate to real estate agents?
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not sure what my job is. it's all the jobs, but realistically, I woke up one day and realized that Our industry wasn't going to be here in 6, 7, 9, 10, 15 years. And honestly, I don't know what that number is. It didn't matter to me if it was 20 years because I saw my company still here in 20 years. Like, I might not be doing what I'm doing, but someone in this company is. So I needed to make sure that I was solving problems for the future. And my business partner today, Ben Kinney, was the same way. He woke up every day and said, gosh, I know I'm selling a lot of homes, but that's not going to solve the problems for the future. And we just saw these massive, at the time, real estate teams. And I'm like you, like now I look at them as they're not teams, but they're real estate businesses. There were these massive real estate teams and they were selling lots of homes, but they really weren't doing anything different. They were just getting bigger. Like they were getting bigger and putting more time into it. So that's how they sold more homes. They went from 50 to 100 to 200 to 300 to 500. Like there was teams doing 1,000 and you think, well, how in the world? Well, they have 120 people. And so I took a step back and said, that isn't going to solve the consumer's problems nor the business owner's problems. So we over, gosh, a 5-year period began sort of sketching out what it was that the you and I's of the previous you and I's of the world, right? The real estate team owners really needed. And we looked at other businesses and there was this business model sort of sprouting up in other businesses like dentists and doctors and attorneys. And it was a business service platform. Like these firms or practices ran on this business service platform that would take care of their website and CRM and lead gen and lead conversion and their marketing and management and accounting and HR and legal and recruiting and talent retention and coaching and training. And so he said, why doesn't the real estate business have this? And so at first we said, well, does brokerage do that? Is that what brokerage is trying to solve? And they're not. Like brokerage has a purpose. Like it's a one-to-many solution. It is, hey, what can we do? What can we build such that as many real estate agents can plug into this platform and run businesses, right? And sell homes a little bit easier. That's a service that for the 1.4 to 2.4 million, right, real estate agents, whichever number you look at, they need that. That's fine. But the top business owners, they needed something else. And that's what Place is. It's a platform that helps those top real estate business owners and their staff in each market eliminate almost all daily business tasks so that they have more time to then help buyers buy, help sellers sell, help investors invest. And it's a business service platform that sort of runs the business so they can scale locally or scale in new markets.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think business services, like there's no doubt that something needed. Like you mentioned brokerages. I mean, brokerage, like you said, like I always look at brokerage as like it's a clearinghouse, right? It's a legal necessity. Some provide more than that. Some only provide that, like in, you know, anywhere in between. But to your point, it's one to many, right? No matter what model is, it's one to many as opposed to kind of one to a few and going into that business services model. So you and you mentioned his name earlier, Ben Kinney, partnered a few years ago. How long ago has that been now since you guys decided to do that?
You know, we sat down and started building it about 5.5 years ago. We launched the company the month before COVID. So that was perfect.
Timing, yeah.
Yeah, it was perfect. Like our timing is always impeccable. But you know, like there's never good time. Like I've internalized there's never good timing. You just go, right? So about 2.5 years ago.
Cool. And so what's Place look like today? You and for the listener, we're recording this. And I think I'll be able to probably be released sometime this month too, but we're recording early May of 2022. What's Place look like today? Kind of from like a size standpoint, teams and partners and things like that.
Yeah. We have about 120 or so partners on that platform. So 120 teams in top metro markets. That team initially partnered when they were at about $1.5 million in revenue. That business was doing that on average when they partnered. And we have teams that are doing $5-6 million in revenue and up now after that partnership. That looks like just over about 1,000 agents that are all part of those businesses, right? An agent on those teams in those locations. We last year went out and raised some capital and happy to talk about why, but we raised capital. We took on a partner, Goldman Sachs, which, you know, they gave us a valuation of $1 billion. And we raised $100 million on that valuation to really then scale and build and move faster. And that's because we believe that that the consumer is driving our industry now, and the consumer has shown up to the table and said, hey, we need this to be easier. Like, we don't want to talk to 6 or 7 or 8 different consultants and professionals in this process. And by doing that, we believe that the consumer loyalty gap in our industry is lower than any industry, like shockingly lower. Like, we're at a 13% consumer loyalty gap. And you look at insurance agents and they're at 96, accountants are at 95, attorneys are at 92. Like, it's crazy. But that's because we as consultants say, hey, just let me sell your house. Like, I'll sell your house. Like, let me get to the commission, instead of holistically saying, how do we actually provide a service for the life cycle of homeownership, from purchase to sale, to management, to maintenance, to insurance, to financing. And so in order to do that, that takes capital. And that's why we went out and raised that money.
Yeah. I think, you know, just kind of even just to step back for a second is, we as an industry behave so transactional. And so of course the consumers do as well, as they rightfully should in that scenario. I think as I sit here and think about this even further, going back a step of like, hey, because the reward or the payoff, the paycheck can be so big where it can allow people to then take time off, too much time off and be too distracted. Then what happens is, there's the feeling of, well, I have to be transactional because I need a transaction like now or in the next 90 days. So I don't even have built into that farm you referenced, the law of the farm by Covey earlier. I don't even have time to do some of the things that would just be like about maintaining the seeds that I might have planted, because I've got to go find something now, right? Yeah. I got to go find some fruit to pick today.
I think a bigger and related issue, Kevin, is that then everyone that's coming into it, I call it our industry, knows that we're like that. And so, you know, there's some brilliant, like, this is what motivated me, right? When you say, like, what do you do every day? But what motivates me is there's some brilliant entrepreneurs, right? Tech entrepreneurs in the real estate space. And to be fair, hands down, they have figured out some very simple solutions to some complex problems. But see, they came into our industry and said, hey, I think you guys have this problem over here. Like, everybody needs cash before they buy, and it's hard and they're losing. So all these companies sprung up to solve that problem. Or then there was companies that said, oh, you need to sell your house, but your house looks like it's bad. Like, you need to fix this up. And so what if we funded the fix up of it? And there was these concierge companies that sprung it up. So then we as consumers say, oh, I want that. That'll get me another transaction. And we take this solution from that company and this solution from that company and this solution from that company, because they were good solutions. But that's because it was an entrepreneur that said, hey, there's an addressable market here. Let me go solve this problem. I can make some money too. And they do. And we gladly pay. We pay 20%, 25%, 30%, 40%, 50% for either the lead or for the solution, when in reality, what we just did was we added more complication to the process. I think we just wake up and realize that there's no reason why every single year we should sell 5.5 million homes. Like, every year, this I know we sold 6 million last year, congratulations, but every year it's the same number. But household formation keeps going up. There's more people that want to buy. It's just the friction in it, like, is that's our level of friction. Like, there's 5.5 million people that are willing to go through that process. I really believe if we simplified that and we had that approach that all those solutions were built from the inside out and not from the outside into our industry, we would actually sell more houses and increase the total addressable market in the industry.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like this is part of the reason why, you know, I had the same conversation like 5 years ago. I was like, man, I don't know, we must not have more than a 5 to 7 year runway. And I've totally changed that in that mindset, because you talk about these solutions. What you see, these solutions are all just plugging one of the holes. They're putting a spotlight on a hole and then they're plugging it. But just like the rest of the industry, then they realize, well, that's only a certain part of it. And you'll see some of these companies that have stuck around for a while, not to pick on them, because I think they've all done good things. Like, they've all forced us to realize we have to deliver something better to the consumer. But like Open Door or OfferPad, so many of these companies, now what they all start to begin to look like a traditional brokerage eventually.
Yeah.
Like they, because they realize like this one problem that I solved, which was awesome, great solution. I can't necessarily make a living just doing that. So I've got to be able to do these other things where I can start to solve. And so like the good news is we can do that too. Like we can solve the same thing they're solving. And we probably even actually have a head start on being able to grow because hopefully, because we've got a database and we've got clients and we've got the, like the core competencies down of this business. And so at any rate, I don't know, I guess I kind of went off a tangent there, but that's something I think about a lot.
Yeah. And I think the other side of that then becomes, then they're moving towards looking, acting, and creating revenue, much like a traditional brokerage. But that game's been played. Like we know what a traditional brokerage is valued at. We know what multiples they get, right, from the public markets. And that's why, you know, people wake up and they're surprised that, oh gosh, how come the value of that company has dropped? It's the reality of how they're generating revenue today. Like people in Wall Street might be dumb for a little while, but there's really bright people there. Like I know we make fun of them, but they're bright. And so they'll figure that out. And eventually they'll be like, wait a second. No, you're a brokerage pretending to be a tech company. So you're not going to get that tech multiple. So I think that's a whole nother conversation, but it's why those companies, when you say, hey, they're kind of beginning to look like brokerages. Yeah. And the stock market's telling them they look like brokerages too.
100%. Yeah. There's no doubt about it because, and again, I look at that as like, that's good news. I've said for a while, like we should look at this as going, hey, the fact that there's enough demand for a company like that to form tells me that there was something with consumers that we as an industry were not addressing and not delivering. And it's an opportunity. So I think all that's good. So, all right, man. So we've been going for 40 minutes or so already. Let me about place like, so gosh, over 1,000 agents kind of total between the 100+ partners, in all the major metro areas. Like you guys have raised money, you guys are doing a lot. Like what's next? Like, what do you see happening for place over the next 12 to 18 months? And, let's just kind of give a teaser there.
Yeah. Our belief is that the real estate consultant will facilitate consumer decisions at all points of the real estate transaction and for the whole life cycle of home ownership. What that means is we need to be able to deliver those solutions to the business owners and their agents. And by doing that, one, it will create a better consumer experience, which we believe ultimately has to be the main focus. Like we learned that from Jeff Bezos, right? For 25 years, he said, I know, but I'm going to focus on the consumer and the business will grow. And it'll be profitable. So if we make decisions for the consumer, but truly believe that all of the value will be delivered by the agent, and that will actually open up new economic opportunity for the business owner, the business owner of those real estate businesses, as well as the agents that are on those teams to build books of business that have multiple revenue streams, which will solve our talent acquisition, talent retention problem, which has always been an issue in this industry, because it'll be less transactional and it will be a life cycle of homeownership.
Yeah, I love that. Chris, for the person listening who's like, that sounds cool, I want to learn more about this kind of business service thing that Place is doing. What's the place for people to go to kind of learn more about that or explore more of that?
Yeah, that word works brilliantly. Right? But it's place.com. Our goal is to bring everything home to one place. And so, right, on place.com, consumers as well as industry professionals can go and find out more about what we do, how we see the world, what we're building, and how to be part of it.
Awesome. And I know you guys too are like, I just saw you recently at an event that you put on and are, you know, kind of always doing, if someone wants to kind of catch up with you, whether it's something you're doing virtually or in person, speaking events, things like that, what's the best place for people to keep up with Chris?
Yeah, probably like I'm on LinkedIn probably more than anything. So just LinkedIn, Facebook, I'm there too. So they'll track me down.
You nerd, LinkedIn. Are you the one sending me all the bot spams in my
100%. That's just me. It's just me.
You're doing it all. That's awesome. Yeah. all right, guys. Chris, as before we sign off, man, anything else that we didn't touch on that we should have, or question I didn't ask you that I should have?
No, I think, you know, big picture, businesses are built on people, right? And so, as you think about like, where am I today, right? Real estate agent, team owner, business owner, it doesn't matter where we are. Every successful business, isn't just about the idea or the tech or the innovation. It's about the people and getting into business with good people and smart people and driven people is what great businesses are all about. And so, you know, continue building with that in mind. And so eventually, you know, what do I do every day? I'm in talent acquisition, right? So I'm talking to people every day, looking for ways to get into business or partnership with them. So that's just our philosophy.
Awesome. All right, guys, check it out, place.com. You can find Chris. We'll link to his LinkedIn, maybe even his Facebook page as well, in the show notes. And we'll talk another time. Chris, thanks for taking the time today, dude.
My pleasure. Thanks for what you do.
All right, guys, talk to you next week.
Did you enjoy today's podcast? Join the Kevin and Fred community, part of eXp Realty, and partner with us today. You'll get free access to live trainings 2 or more times a month, live events and in-person masterminds, digital downloads to help you run and scale your business, and much, much more. To learn more and join our community, visit kevinandfred.com/contact and contact us today. Not ready to join our community? No problem. Continue enjoying all this great content on our podcast for free.